Hello, I'm Jamie Flinchball, host of People Solve Problems, and today we have as our special guest Jeff Grimshaw. Jeff, how you doing?
Good. Thanks, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on the show. So Jeff's a principal at MG Strategy, a firm he co-founded 15 years ago. Can't believe it's been that long. As he describes it, as a small firm with a big footprint, which I think is a great phrase. Helps clients on six continents evolve their leadership and culture as a source of competitive advantage. And I'll add personally, Jeff and I have had a chance to collaborate both with client work in the past, and then more recently, we had a limited series podcast that we did together, just 9 episodes of Happy Heuristics, where we explored that topic. And so any time I get to talk about interesting stuff with Jeff is a good day. So,
yeah. Yeah, good for me as well. This is, if anybody is listening, then that's icing on the cake. But I'm always happy to engage in brain candy conversations with you, Jamie. You
know. Yes, brain candy is a phrase I stole from you and use repeatedly. As I tell people, I do this podcast for extremely selfish reasons, to just get a chance to have these conversations. So.
I like it.
So I want to get into problem solving, I take you as a very, sort of inquisitive, person. You love to explore new ideas. And so how do you explore, play with, experiment with, integrate, new problem solving, techniques? And I'd say probably both for yourself and or for your clients.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I have gotten a lot more clarity about just over the last 18 months or so has been about the difference between what I'm going to call play it safe spaces and go for great spaces or go for great environments. And so let me just give you a little bit of a backdrop there. So a lot of the work that I've been doing in large multinationals over the last 5, 7, 8 years has been in organizations that are super complex and they want to be more nimble. They want to be more agile. They want to do things with greater speed. And the big push on all of this is, of course, is that they're finding themselves in environments where they're smaller, more nimble, more agile competitors are making inroads. And so this is seen as like, if we don't change our culture to get better at testing and learning trying new things, taking calculated risk, then we're going to be in a bad place, even though that's not where they have been or operated, the mindset that they've operated from. So in the work, it's all about, how can you evolve leader mindset? How can you move yourself to a place where it's more about playing to win and thinking about the long term and being more fearless as opposed to a more reactive mindset that is more about needing to be right or avoid having been seen as wrong, God forbid? And how do you, really just operate in survival mode? So you live today to show up and do the same damn thing again tomorrow, a hard way. People have, got there honestly, but like really hard to be agile if you're operating from that survival mindset.
Right.
And so one way that we have, we've actually thought about that is like, a slogan that we often use to describe the work we're doing is like, how do we evolve from an environment where we are too often playing it too safe to an environment where we are more often going for great? And as you think about that, though, the reality is that any organization, including these organizations that are trying to become more agile, they actually do have play it safe domains where, for example, if you're in consumer products, when it comes to regulatory stuff, industrial safety, product quality, like these are places where actually it's really important. If you had a stick up your rear end, like keep it there, right? Like these are the places where it's important to really like follow the standards. Super high process adherence is really key. But the reality is that they also have lots of go for great environments where actually keeping the stick there is slowing them down. And then what's really interesting is to get into the environments where it's like, oh, well, what is maybe in the middle, or it depends. So a big breakthrough for a lot of these organizations just over the last 18 months has been to get really clear about saying, these are our goal for great, or sorry, these are our play it safe environments. Like, we're not messing around here. These are our goal for great environments. And in fact, if we are not taking risk in our go for great environments, if we're not willing to problem solve in ways that break things in small ways, if we're not willing to try some things that are not going to work because that's how we're going to learn, then we are actually creating more systemic risk for the organization. So it's actually like, play it safe, like, don't take any risk. Go for great. If you're not taking risk as individuals, you are creating more systemic risk. And then the really fun category is also like, what's in the middle? So some of these organizations, they had lumped labor management, like, European work councils, in the play it safe space. But with challenging, it's like, you know what? No, we actually need to move that closer to the go for great space. Long way of saying, Jamie, that I think one of the most important things here is to actually, when you've got a slogan that sounds cool, like, go for great versus playing it safe, it's really about delineating the problem-solving domains.
Yeah. And that's, and you're a culture expert. So, we'll pull on this thread because a lot of organizations will aspire to that, right? Hey, we want to be go for great, but we're a risk-averse, conservative organization, and we want to change that. Then when you push on it, they realize, boy, we really don't want to change that because there are areas that we want to play it safe. And then there's organizations that sort of go all out on being, this is sort of your type A, testosterone-driven organization. Everything's go for great. Everything's all in. And so that becomes the cultural norm that can, basically spread across everything, right? Including personal decisions, right? How do you live your life? Because it just becomes part of the culture. And so I think, the idea of discerning and saying, no, we want to be both, right? We're not about being a risk-averse organization or a risk-forward organization. We're about making good decisions about when to be which. And so I think that's probably harder, right? But very useful. And so what I want to ask next is essentially, how much does the underlying culture matter in making that decision? Is it separate from the culture, or is the underlying culture a big driver of how you become discerning about those two domains?
Yeah, it's pretty much defining. So, here's an example. I think, there's a big word that can be a turnoff. It's ergodicity, but and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but the big difference here is in understanding how what are our ergodic and non-ergodic environments, and then what is the mindset that we bring to them, and that's all about culture. So I'll unpack that real quickly. So you think about, like, for example, you and I worked in a utility company, I don't know, I guess 10, 12 years ago, and they'd had some terrible things happen. And why did these things happen? Because they took some risk in a what we call a non-ergodic environment. They took risk where there was only a, anytime somebody took this particular risk, cut a corner, maybe there was only a 1 in 50,000 chance of it going badly, ending up catastrophically. And people took those risks. If you said to somebody, will you pay Russian roulette for $1 million? The odds are in your favor. Like, the odds
Right.
are 5 out of 6 that you're going to walk away with $1 million. But if you lose, that's catastrophic. That's a non-ergodic environment, meaning it doesn't all just come out in the wash and average out, converge around the mean, the outcomes are, something catastrophic and irreversible is going to happen.
Right.
In that particular utility company, they were cutting corners, but instead of playing Russian roulette, they were playing with much different odds, where it's like, well, for any single individual, the way that I can stay safe is by, and not get yelled at by my supervisor, is to do things quickly. And if there's only a 1 in 50,000 chance that cutting that corner ends up catastrophically, then that seems rational for me. It's Russian roulette, but on a bigger scale. The problem at a systemic level is that if you've got 30,000 employees playing, taking a risk that only has a 1 in 50,000 chance, eventually those risks are going to aggregate and it's going to blow up. So in this case, it's people, what ultimately had landed that catastrophe was enough people in an environment where people are under pressure going, what I am solving for, the risk I'm managing here is I don't want my boss to yell at me.
Right.
Okay, now let's go to the other environment where it's actually, oh, I'm an organization that is wants to like test and learn. I want to like try new things. I want to be more agile. I want to put speed over perfection and all the things that all these organizations say. But in this case, I want to speak up. I want to do all these things. And then when people don't do it and you unpack that, it's because they don't want their boss to yell at them. Because in those pressurized situations, what they remember is all the times when they did speak up or when they did try something or when they did experiment. And it turned out it didn't work. And what they really found out was, oh, yeah, we want you to take risk. We want you to experiment. But only, take a good calculated risk. But the only way we're ever going to know if it was a good calculated risk is if it actually works out. But again, what people in both cases, in play safe environments and in go for great environments, you have to have a culture where people are willing to do the right thing for the system, and as opposed to doing the thing that they think is going to avoid them getting yelled at by their boss. Because in the go for great environment, it was like, oh yeah, well yeah, we didn't mean to take a calculated risk like that, you idiot. Like that's not what we meant. In both cases, it's like people trying to manage their own egos, and so really ultimately the way that you have people's ego interest aligned with the enterprise interest is through culture.
Yeah. No, that's pretty important. I like how you put it both ways in both directions, because yeah, if you only judge taking risky decisions based on whether they turned out well, it's hard to actually take those risky decisions. And you kind of indicated, right, this is, very true. We tend to, as human beings, we underestimate the probability of low probability risks.
Yes. Yeah.
Like the pandemic wasn't a black swan event. It was a gray swan event, right? It was predictable. Yeah. Just we underestimated how likely it was. And so, so as you go forward with that, it does change. These are often, decisions around fundamentally ill-defined, open-ended, ambiguous problems. So let me take a particular example of, go for great opportunity is, hey, let's redesign our core product and basically make it extinct, right? Let's eat our own lunch there and move forward. But you want to do that before somebody else does, but what's the probability somebody else does, right? What's the probability you actually need to do that? And so the inclination is, well, if I screw up designing that new product and it doesn't do as well, I'm it's all on me. But if I don't, right, then we're at huge risk. So because the assessment of risk and the success of risky decisions is so much in the future and so ambiguous, how do you factor that into these decision-making and solution sets?
Yeah. I think this is where we have to have, clarity about, this is where I think it's important to build into decision-making processes what we know about human biases, for example. Like, we don't, when we make extra effort to mitigate risk, we don't know what catastrophes we prevented. And so that's part of where our skewed sense of risk comes from, is because we don't, but we sure as hell know that when things go south, then we'll figure out what went wrong. So I think part of it is, how do we impose a little more learning than may feel necessary onto an organizational culture, because we know as human beings that we need it. You were speaking about resulting bias, and I think this is huge, and it's really shocking to me how few executives understand this idea that, we've got clients where they say they want people to take calculated risk. But then when people go, but what is an appropriately calculated risk? The answer is essentially, in retrospect, if this thing turned out, then that means it was appropriately calculated. And if it didn't or wasn't, you're an idiot. And that is a recipe to not have anybody try anything ever.
Right.
Resulting bias is the idea that Annie Duke wrote about beautifully in her book, Thinking in Bets. Poker pro, awesome, smart human being, and said, it's we live in a probabilistic world. Resulting bias is this idea that that we judge things only based on their outcomes rather than on the quality of the decision making based on what was available at the time. And at a poker table, there are going to be you're going to do everything right based on game theory. And you're still going to lose sometimes as a probability. And in some cases, somebody who's an idiot is going to luck their way into a win. So, part of this is about building into our schemes for decision making and problem solving some nudges that take into account that as human beings, we're going to jump to conclusions or have biases or intuitions that actually are going to potentially get us into trouble if we don't correct for them.
So this is super important because there are inherent biases, right? And so there's some biases that you can change, right? Based on gathering more information and practicing to operate a different way. There's some biases that are just always going to be present. So do you have examples of those nudges that can help us with something like a resulting bias?
Well, I think, a simple, obvious, but not always implemented one is the rigor around after action reviews. And and calling them something, or retrospectives. And I like retrospective. We've got too many organizations who still call things postmortem, which is like, which means we're only going to do them after things go badly. And then, and of course, nobody's going to be defensive right out of the gate for something called the postmortem. Retrospective is great because I think part of what it does is create a frame to say things might have worked out wonderfully, and there are things to learn regardless. And things might have turned out badly, and we probably didn't do everything wrong. And so it is about, so even something small like that, having the same rigor around after action reviews or retrospectives, whether things go perfectly or terribly or somewhere in between, is a nice nudge for divorcing, is for accounting for resulting bias and accounting for and accounting for that, and saying we got to learn either from successes and mistakes, because there's not a one-to-one correlation between decision quality and outcome.
That's a great practical tip to end on. I think when you get in the habit of looking at your successes and challenging why they might have occurred even differently than you predicted, you start to see it wasn't, not all successes were because of you, and not all failures were because of something else, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, for sure. Yes. Another bias. Yes.
Another bias, yes.
Our self-serving bias. Yeah.
So you're fantastic. I love the topic and appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your perspective and advice. So thanks, Jeff.
My pleasure. Anytime. Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks for listening to the People Solve Problems podcast. Let's keep the conversation going. Visit jflinch.com for more episodes and other content. And continue to join us on your podcast app, of course. We greatly appreciate your feedback through reviews and ratings. Consider expanding your understanding of problem solving with Jamie's book, People Solve Problems, The Power of Every Person, Every Day, Every Problem, available on Amazon. Until next time, keep learning, innovating, and solving problems.